trusty money remains the bedrock of stability. The soul of money is trust.
I think we are not paying sufficient attention to the law of unintended consequences.
In the immortal words of the Doors, the time to hesitate is through.
Daniel Prince, how's it going?
It's going well, man. Nice to meet you. Thanks for reaching out.
No, likewise, and thank you for replying. It's a bit of a shot in the dark on my part. It's always nerve-wracking to send a DM. You never quite know who's going to respond or who's just got their Twitter inbox flooded with messages and requests. So, look, I'm of the opinion just hit it and hope and see what happens. And look, I'm very grateful that you replied and are now being able to spend a little bit of time and energy with me. Thank you.
Mate, you're welcome. It's, you never, what's the worst that can happen, right? To any plebs out there that are wondering whether or not they should reach out to people, that's how my pod started too. Just send a DM.
Yeah.
If you don't get response, you don't get response. You're not going to get a flat no, go fuck yourself. That doesn't exist. You might get someone say, thank you so much for the invitation, but I'm too busy or I'm jammed up for the next 3 months. I've had loads of those.
Yeah.
You just make a little note in your calendar, swing back around with XYZ at this date in 3 months' time and just send another little DM, just following up.
Mm-hmm.
It happens in the end. So I try and say to people, I try to lead by example, I suppose, and just say, just do it. Because I procrastinated for so long to start my own podcast. That was 3 years ago. And I can't imagine what I wouldn't have learned if I hadn't have started my podcast 3 years ago.
Precisely. You do just have to just dive in and get it done, which is kind of the impetus for this, really. So how did you discover Bitcoin?
Yeah, very good question. So I knew about it early. This is the usual story. And again, for anybody that's new to Bitcoin or listening to the show that is kind of thinking, I've missed it. You haven't. You're still way, 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 way so early
mm-hmm.
in this journey into the new financial system for the world. I heard about it sitting on my desk when I was working in fiat currency world. We talk about clown world a lot. I look back at my past life. I used to work as a foreign exchange broker. That was my existence from the age of 19 to 37.
Wow.
Getting in the mornings at anywhere between 6 to 6:30 a.m. and leaving in the evenings anywhere between 5 and, depending on markets, as late as 9 or 10 p.m. And just selling your soul to the system to chase after that dollar on the fish hook that was constantly hung in front of your nose.
Mm.
And I never questioned what money was. It was just a way for me to earn a living. Very high octane kind of environment, brilliant atmosphere to be around. If you thrived in that environment, if you didn't, you were gone within seconds. Very toxic atmosphere. And I remember, and I moved to Singapore when I was 22. So that was 1999. And I remember reading about Bitcoin, goodness knows when it was, maybe 11 or 12, and just immediately like poo-pooing it like everybody else. Like, this is internet geek money. What do they think they're trying to achieve? This is crazy. Because I was sat there in my seat as close to the almighty spigot of money, the Cantillon effect. Like, you couldn't be any closer, really. Other than being right in the direct, firing line as one of the receiving banks to disseminate the money throughout the markets. Mm-hmm. The way they did that was to come through the foreign exchange brokerage markets. I was Johnny on the spot, and I had no idea.
Yeah, you're right at the heart of it.
Yep. So I ignored it like everybody else did around me. I don't know anybody. Yeah, thinking back, I really don't know anybody that took a look at it and said, guys, we got to get some of this. It was total hubris in the industry, whether that was on the trading side in the banks or the brokerage side that I was on. It was complete ignorance of what was emerging. And then I remember another key moment was the Mt. Gox hack, or Mt. Gox, however people want to pronounce it. And for those people listening that aren't aware, that was an exchange that was in Japan. That was somewhere you could send your money in and they would exchange it for Bitcoin for you. But what people weren't doing, which we advocate for very, very loudly in the Bitcoin space now, is nobody was self-custodying, or very few people were self-custodying, i.e. taking that Bitcoin back off the exchange. People were converting their dollars or their euros or the yen or the pounds, whatever it was they were doing, into Bitcoin on the exchange, but then they were just leaving the Bitcoin on the exchange as if it was just another one of their brokerage accounts.
Right.
And that ultimately got hacked. And it got hacked and all of the Bitcoin was stolen that was being held on the exchange. I didn't even understand that at the time. This is how ridiculously little I had looked into it. I thought that was the end of Bitcoin. I thought that was Bitcoin Corp gone. You know, like, oh, they found the dudes and now they've taken everybody's Bitcoin, and what were they ever expecting? So, you know, two glaring misses on my part, not to have a look and take it more seriously. Then in 2014, my life took a huge U-turn. I read the 2013 back end. I read the 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss.
Mm-hmm.
And that helped me shape the rest of my life, basically. It made me realize, it held a mirror up to me, like, you know, what are you doing? You're living a deferred lifestyle. You've got a wife and 4 kids at home. You never see them. The kids one day are just going to be gone, and you're going to still be sat at this desk, still quoting these same numbers, still running after these same belligerent customers, all for just a dollar at the end of the day. And at that point in Singapore, the cost of living crisis, you know, this was way back then, had ballooned to such a point where even though you're working all of that time, you were still net zero come the end of the month in a very highly paid industry. And I just couldn't make any sense of it.
That's crazy.
Like, this doesn't add up. Like, nothing makes any sense at all. And I couldn't put my finger on it.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously Bitcoin was just sitting over in the corner there, like, you looked at me twice.
Ticking away.
So we took the plunge, and due to that book, Tim Ferriss's book, I quit my career. We made a wholesale family change. We sold everything we owned, pretty much, and gave the keys in back to the rental property we were in, and took the kids out of school. And we decided that we wanted to travel in the region because we're probably going to end up back in the UK looking for a job at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to travel first with the kids and at least do some kind of mammoth cool trip. And we thought, yeah, we'll go for 6 to 9 months. We'll do lots of Southeast Asia. We'll go and explore Australia and New Zealand. And then we can start making our way home and end up back in the UK and perhaps looking for a job. That quickly morphed into 2.5 years of just constant travel. And that initial knee-jerk reaction after exiting the system, the first 2 weeks, the 3 weeks or so, you're okay, you're pretty chilled. It just feels like a normal family holiday.
Mm-hmm.
Then all of a sudden, your monkey mind kicks in and anxiety just comes crushing down on you when you realize, oh shit, I'm unemployed.
Think of the skills you're losing at the moment.
Yeah.
And all that.
All of that.
all of that sunk cost fallacy, which you'd already fought through to make the decision in the first place, it all comes screaming back at you. And I remember, obviously, I'd done my best throughout that 17 to 18 year career to save as much as I could. And I had the savings wrapped up in, like, you know, classic shitty stuff like Zurich funds or Prudential or Aberdeen, you know, whatever these people manage to sell you as a young guy when you've got some expendable income. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at these things, and then I'd read Anthony Robbins' book, Money Master the Game, and he exposed all of these things, you know, how they just capture fees over time. I was like, shit, I'm stuck in these. I need something else. And luckily for me, a friend of mine, Grant Williams, had just started Real Vision with Raoul Powell back in, when did they start that? 2013 or 14? And I remember speaking with Grant and asking him if they're ever going to do any interviews on Bitcoin. And he said, yes, we've got some coming. Just keep an eye on the platform. And sure enough, they started coming. And then once I had watched a few interviews with Wences Cesares, Tour de Mista, Trace Mayer, they were the three I remember. I'm doing some injustice, I'm sure, to a few other people that they might have had on. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. My God, I really need to have another look at this. And that's what I did. I started trying to find as many sources as I could to figure out what Bitcoin was and how it might be able to protect our wealth going forward, at least while we were on, you know, this kind of extended trip. So yeah, that they were the major touch points for me. That's how I eventually started falling down the rabbit hole. Interestingly, actually, I've only written the introduction so far, but I'm going to try and get a book out next year called 21 Touchpoints, because I think there's a lot of stuff that happened decades ago in everybody's life that was priming you for Bitcoin in some way. We've all got those stories where you have these flashbacks when you suddenly come to Bitcoin and everything starts clicking. You're like, ah, if only I had that in 1992, because I was getting royally screwed by a bank that wasn't letting me take out my money. Or, you know, there are so many of these little touch points that happen pre-Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. It's just interesting to discover those and then help. That's what Bitcoin does. It just makes so much more sense of the shit that's happened before. All of that shit you couldn't work out since the day you were born, because nothing's made sense since 1971. And we're all pretty much, you know, people of our age, like, we've grown up under a fiat standard. Mm-hmm. We've grown up under a fucking lie.
Yeah.
All of it. All of it.
And it sounds so hyperbolic to say that, but it's actually the truth. You know? It's the truth. It's a fucking lie. All of it's a scam. All of it. Really, all of it. Except for maybe your family. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And your friends.
Yeah. It goes deep, man. Think about everything. Yeah. Even your friends. Because a lot of those friends were forced association relationships. If you're still friends with somebody that you made friends with at school, you didn't make friends with them. You were forcibly put into a room together for 15 years.
Mm.
And you just so happened to hang on to each other just to fight your way through this fucking hell that we call the institution of state education. And that period, that's where your identity is formed, that's where your ego is formed, that's where your beliefs are formed outside of the family home. I'm going to do an interview with Seb Bunny, and we're going to go into this very deeply because he and I have both read a book called Hold On To Your Kids by Gabor Mate.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why I'm such a big proponent of, you know, taking more control of your kids' education. Obviously, I fell down that rabbit hole by mistake when we went on the world trip. But at the same time, I was falling down the Bitcoin rabbit hole. I was falling down the self-education rabbit hole, self-directed education or self-led education, however you want to call it. People call it unschooling, homeschooling, deschooling, whatever it is. You know, it all lives under the same umbrella. The idea is the state should not ever be in control over what your children learn and how they learn and why they learn it. That is a disastrous idea.
Mm.
And yet here we are. So we come out of these institutions. And this is why we're in the position now where nobody knows who the fuck they are. No one.
Mm.
Because you've come out of that 15-year brainwashing camp, and then you've gone into extra education, most likely, anywhere between 2 to 4 years, to really define who you are, to force you into making a decision of what you want to be when you grow up at the age of 18. And then boxhole you, corner you, literally hold you against the wall, say, you have to choose a course at college now. This is what society expects from you. And unfortunately, in a lot of families, this is what your parents expect from you because they've been through the same mill and they are dealing all day long with the societal construct around them and the judgment over, oh, what's little Johnny going to do when he grows up and all of this kind of bullshit. Nobody's got the room to actually figure out what it is and who they are and why they're here and what they can do to make the biggest and most impactful, you know, impact on the world that we live on.
Mm.
No, you got to be a doctor. You got to be a lawyer. You got to be an XYZ. So we end up painting ourselves into these college courses, into these corners. Then you end up getting this freaking pointless certificate and degree, which is regulatory capture at the highest order. And then you paint yourself into some other career that doesn't even tally with the degree that you studied for just because there was an open door somewhere and you took it. And 30 years later, you can't figure out how you've been doing this job for 30 years, why you've missed your kids growing up, why you're fat and unhappy.
Yep. Yep. It's pretty crazy. And I mean, you could even argue and make a case for the prevalence of social media nowadays. And if you've built some kind of an online profile and people know or think that they know you in that particular capacity that you've, you know, operated within at least maybe until finding Bitcoin, right? And you may want to explore your own other traits of your personality. But woe betide anybody that posts something outside of the sanctioned remit that the character that you've sort of developed online, as it were. It's a bit like, you know, if Adam Sandler starts doing a dramatic role rather than a comedy role, and people are aghast. What? And he's pretty good at it, sort of thing. It's just like we just like boxes. We just like to put people in containers, and it's sort of like a taxonomy where, okay, I've got that person's number now, and that's the thing that I'll go to them for that information or whatever. And you know, if they step outside of that in a personal sense, or maybe they just say fuck it, I'm going to start shouting nonsense on Twitter or put stuff on Instagram that people may not agree with, you know, then you just see it, you follow it, it goes down, and it's like, oh shit. But it's you are as a human being, and you're sort of beholden to this ideal which is outside of you, as opposed to knowing who you are and allowing yourself to be an individual. And I think, as curious as it is, because you know, fundamentally Bitcoin is a protocol, and it's a protocol for value exchange, which we call money. And yet it gives you the freedom and confidence to be who you want to be, which is amazing.
Because it's truth.
Because it's truth. Yeah.
That's what it all comes back down to. At the base layer, it's truth. Dollars, complete fucking lie. Whether they're Australian, Hong Kong, American, Singaporean, all a lie.
Mm-hmm.
All manipulated and all controlled. And yeah, if you think of that business model, right? If you can force people, like our species, you know, we as we evolved over time, we came to the discovery of a medium of exchange. That's what defines our species from anything else on this planet. We have the ability, we use a medium of exchange to express value to one another. If that medium of exchange is then co-opted and coerced and captured and forced upon you, you have to use the Australian dollar.
Corrupt.
Or yeah, you're going to jail. So I've now got you to use it. You have to use the Australian dollar to pay me taxes, or you're going to jail.
Hmm.
So now I can control you. You have to use the Australian dollar to accept payment for the work that you do. So now I've got your energy. You have to use the Australian dollar to buy food for your family, to buy the shelter. So now I've completely captured you.
Hmm. And
that's what we have. That's the system we have.
Your
Bitcoin is the opposite.
The complete opposite, because you're operating on a system, you're being forced to use this dollar, which is actually designed to go down in value intentionally. Mm-hmm. And in the case of the Australian dollar, it's denominated against the US dollar. And so you're kind of being fleeced twice, effectively.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
Anyone not earning US dollars is being denominated in two sets of shitcoin before, you know, you can actually express any true value. So it's remarkable. Bitcoin fixes this, I guess.
Yeah, the US dollar is the base chain of a shitcoin, and everything else on top of that is just another shitcoin of its own little flavor. You know, mine has... at the moment it's euros.
Right.
If I go to the UK, if I take euros to the UK, this is the joke of fiat money as well. Right? If I take euros to the UK, I've got a lot of value here that I can go down to the supermarket. I can buy some fruits, vegetables and meats for my wife and family for the week. And I can even perhaps go and sneak myself a beer down at the local bar or cafe, sit in the square, have a nice time. If I turn up just a couple of hundred miles north, I got nothing. I get laughed out the shop when I go to pay with my euros. Like, this is nonsense.
It's such nonsense.
Whereas if we had Bitcoin, if everybody was on a Bitcoin standard, we can all move around freely and we're all expressing value to one another in the same unit that is not controlled and not captured and not coerced and not manipulated. And it is not designed to go down with its purchasing power.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of people are going to think, oh, yeah, but it goes down against the dollar all the time. But you're measuring it incorrectly. Don't look at the sticker price against the US dollar or the Aussie dollar or the euro or whatever. Its purchasing power is what over time is going to be always going up. Sure, day to day, it's going to fluctuate. Week to week, it's going to fluctuate. But over time, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 years time, your purchasing power will steadily increase.
Mm. Yeah.
And
anywhere on the globe.
Absolutely. Yeah.
No matter where you are.
Yeah. And going back to that last point on ego, Jeff Booth talks about this a lot. In fact, he named his fund Ego Death. Mm. And killing, like, really get into grips with your ego as it is now, as you're entering Bitcoin. You might be halfway down the rabbit hole, doesn't matter. If you ever hear people talk about ego death, it's so important to actually take that very, very seriously, because like I said before, you have to kill it because it isn't you. It's been completely engineered from the day you were born, through the education system, through that career that you ended up. It isn't you. And then only when Bitcoin comes along and you feel the truth and you can start opting out of that fiat railed system and start opting into Bitcoin, do you start meeting incredibly new people from all over the world? I mean, my contact list over the last 2 or 3 years has completely changed.
Mm.
But then you start getting the confidence to explore, what does this mean? Who am I, to use the Zoolander kind of meme? Where can I add value in this system over here? Because in this fiat world, I've been doing this for 15 years. I hate it. There's something else going on over here. Where can I add value there? For me, it was start a podcast. For you, the same. For others, it's write a book. For others, it's start a YouTube channel, write an article, sing a song. Like, it's all happening.
Yeah.
Right, the art that's that coming out of people is just incredible. Like, the people that had never even considered being an artist before. Have you seen the guy that's like hand drawing? I can't think of his Twitter handle.
With this
hand
drawing pencil.
Yeah.
And those big gothic sort of church.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. Because
I think he stacks shelves in a supermarket, but then does like this most intricate, wonderful artwork that is just pouring out of him.
Yeah. Because it provides you with a sense of certainty in an uncertain future, because let's face it, the future is uncertain. But if you can carry forward a certain amount of value that you know is at least going to mitigate a decent chunk of that uncertainty, then you can allocate that time and energy to practicing that stencil drawing or whatever the passion may be. And, you know, maybe you're good at it and maybe others see it and go, shit, I really like that. Can I buy it off you? You're like, sure. Yep. I accept that. I accept that. And bang, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And that's why Bitcoin is inevitable.
Mm.
Again, it sounds like such a flagrant thing to say. It just is. And it's not about the price going up every day, which people are addicted to watching. It's about the amount of people joining the network every day. Every single day, more people join the network than are leaving it. And that number will go up forever, every day. And then when people can wrap their head around that, you're like, oh, fuck, right, yeah, no. Now I understand why you say it's inevitable.
Yeah. That's nuts. That's so nuts. Why do you think you are able to discover Bitcoin, you know, be open and minded enough? So obviously you had those initial touch points that dissuaded you, but eventually, and I think you may have already answered this in one of the initial in one of your initial answers, but that question of why you were able to discover Bitcoin, what primed you, do you think, it sort of eventually unlocked once you got rid of the guff?
Yeah. My feet were held to the fire, like I said, when I needed to find that other investment. For me, it was just an investment. It was number go up.
Right.
I was trying to protect the savings that I'd already had. I was already pretty adept to, well, I'd been in financial markets my whole career, and I had invested personally myself in stocks and shares. And so I was also used to seeing big swings in foreign exchange prices, volatility. And I guess I've become pretty numb over the years to panic. And I knew my risk tolerance. A lot of people don't, especially when you come into this, first of all. When you are looking and following the Bitcoin price so closely, that's why people get shaken out so quickly, because they come in, they get excited, they think it's a get rich quick scheme. They put in too much money to begin with. That money gets halved in value within 3 months if we're going into like a little bear market. And so people sell out, they lose their metal and it's gone, and they'll never come back to it. Or they'll come back to it in 2 or 3 years, when if they'd have just held and set up a dollar cost average plan, they'd have had a nice stack of Bitcoin. So Why was I primed for it? Greed is the number one kind of overriding emotion in our kind of psychology, I suppose. And I love Alex Gladstein's framing of this, who's the CSO of the Human Rights Foundation. He said, Bitcoin is a machine that turns greed into freedom. And he's so correct. Because you come in for the mad gains, bro, right? Like most people, that's what gets their attention. Their friend down the pub that's now richer than you because he bought some internet gig money, or those, you know, burning headlines in the newspaper where now one Bitcoin is worth X amount. And you're like, what? How is that possible? And you just wish you had some. That's what most people come in for. That's what I originally came in for, looking for that store of value, looking for another investment, in air quotes. That's when I started, reading as much as I could, watching as many videos as I could. That's when I started playing around with, okay, how do I get some of this? I had to set up an exchange. My goodness, the exchanges I was using back then, they don't exist anymore. I'd had that, obviously, I'd had that lesson, having seen what happened at Mt. Gox, that I knew whatever I bought, I needed to take custody of. So I had to buy one of these little fang-dangled hardware wallet things. Got that shipped over and started playing around with that. It was all self-taught stuff. And the whole time fighting this nagging doubt, you know, the little monkey in your head that's telling you, you don't understand what you're doing. You're going to lose all of your family's money. You need just to get back to work, get an income. You're taking too much of a risk with your kids' education. You've got to get them back into some kind of program, get them into a private school, all of this nonsense that's going on. And at the same time, reading stuff and watching Bitcoin videos and trying to figure out what, you know, blockchain is. And then, I remember those days, everything's going to go on the blockchain, you know? And you'd read, this is back in the days when I'd still be reading Forbes magazine and The Economist. You know, you think you're doing all the right things, but you think you're informing yourself. You're staying in the FT.
Yeah.
You're reading the FT, you've got the subscription, and you're like, and then like all of it is just such freaking nonsense in comparison to what's going on in the Bitcoin space. I think have I answered your original question there? I'm tailing off into
it. Doesn't matter. It's all good. It's a fabulous conversation. I mean, this is the thing about you're freed up in a sense to, if you can, push past all of the doubting and the nagging in your brain. And some of that could be voices, you know, that are from friends, family, that, you know, it's like like that Dewey Cox, you're never going to make it. In that movie where I think it's his girlfriend or his wife, she constantly tells him he's never going to make it, and he's literally a rock star, country superstar, right? Country music superstar. Anyway, you are trying to pass these two worlds together, and eventually I think you just, I don't know if the word is the right word, but you can, there's enormous signal in the amount of intelligence that is currently being drained into this ecosystem. And if you compare the pair, you see the amount of highly intelligent, motivated, passionate, driven individuals all looking to just create some value for other people, themselves as well, versus the people that are so naysaying and reluctant to even glimpse at this thing. And that for me is just pure signal, where it's just like, wow, with all due respect, you're a fucking moron. I'm going to go and hang out with these people, all right? Because I'm learning so much from these people. It's incredible. and you're welcome anytime.
I call those non-versations.
Yeah.
You know, the ones that you used to have every Friday night down the pub with your mates. The surface level bullshit that you're just discussing what's been in the day's paper, what the local footy team has done. You know, all of these distractions that are just pumped at us through mainstream media the whole time, just to keep us completely intellectually, like, dumb, basically.
Mm, mm. Breads and circuses. Read,
yeah, breads and circuses, exactly. I couldn't help thinking breads and circuses the whole way through the World Cup. I'm like, this is just classic breads and circuses. And then not only that, they have this VAR now in football, soccer, whatever you guys want to call it.
This is, you can't derail the conversation here, Daniel. This is because we can go down the VAR hating rabbit hole all day if you like. But it's a pure, and I probably don't want to finish your sentence, but it's a total example of fiat garbage. I mean, yep. Football itself is one of the most low time preference sports. I love it personally. I love watching it. And I thought the final was incredible. However, this thing, this VAR that they slap over the top of it, it's just fiat bullshit. Anyway.
I'm almost convinced it's a psyop.
Yeah, okay.
Because it makes no sense.
It doesn't. No one likes it.
It seems to me they're using it to actively confuse more people than to use it as a tool to stamp out confusion in the game. I just cannot fathom why you have to have five guys wearing fancy dress in a studio that still can't make a decision when they've got like every single angle possible for them, and they still have to defer a decision down to the referee who's, you know, like it. So that the whole thing is just like another clown show on top of, you know, the original clown show. And when it anyway, yeah, you're right. It's just more fiat on top of, imagine, you know, that's all of our sports under a fiat standard.
Yeah.
They're all shit. They're all pointless. It's such a shame.
But that's the motivation. That's the incentive to change it. I mean, it is just like, can you just... Could you just stop ruining things for us, please? I mean, for me, I won't speak for everyone, but just stop ruining. Like this, it was fine. I mean, yeah, it's a Bitcoin podcast, but it works well in the cricket, right?
Yep.
And for our US listeners, I apologize, but like it works perfectly fine in the cricket. You know, it added a level of tense and drama in the rugby as well. Yep. Football, forget it. It's just fiat garbage, and you know. The various iterations across the various leagues, you know, you're actively ruining a really beautiful sport that, yes, is just pure bread and circuses for 90 minutes, no problem, but yeah. All right.
You see, it touches everything. Bitcoin touches everything.
It really does. And it will soon one day. What's remarkable, actually, the baseball team over here in Australia, the Perth Heat.
Yeah, Perth Heat.
They've just started integrating Lightning into their player profiles and on the pictures. So they've got, I think they've got QR codes maybe that show up on the screen. So you can actually donate to them, which is, that's incredibly nascent. But think of, just extrapolate that into the future. I mean, that's just something else.
I had the Oxford City team on, well, not the team. I had Josias Carbon, who helped Orange Pill, Oxford City. They're a non-league club, football club, soccer club in the UK, who are backed now by Coin Corner, sponsor them. So Coin Corner and Josias got together, and Josias lives in Oxford. It's his local team. This is what plebs are doing, right? This is what plebs are doing. They're going to their local team and they're saying, I can bring you a sponsor. Okay, who? Coin Corner. Okay, well, what do they do? They are a Bitcoin exchange. What's Bitcoin? These are touch points that are so important. Right? Mm. And so the sponsor comes in. They've got Bitcoin written on their shirts. Not Coin Corner. Bitcoin written on the back of every single player's shirt. A little Coin Corner logo on the sleeve or something. And so what do you, and now they accept Bitcoin for every match day ticket, all of the food and beverage, the program, anything at all via the Lightning Network. Now it's slow and you've only got 200 to 500 people that come to games like that. But the media manager who was on the call with me has been blown away. This has been a 3-month ongoing project so far. He's like, mate, we've got people tweeting from all over the world. We're shipping shirts. We're shipping shirts to Japan, to Australia. Like this, we're a non-league club. We're 7 leagues beneath the Premier League. What the hell are we doing selling shirts, like, you know, just because Bitcoin on the back of it, and we're accepting Bitcoin for it? So you can see his mind is going through the mill. And then, yes, you're right. You bring the idea of, and we fleshed this out on the call with him, like each one of your players in the program should have a QR code next to their name. So if I'm watching the game, if I come to watch the game, this guy makes a great tackle, this guy makes a great save, this guy's got an amazing assist, this guy's got, he scores an incredible goal, I can just go to their page in the program, flash the QR code, and tip them directly. Fuck it, put the ref and linesman in, you know? If the ref makes a great call, I'm like, that was brave. Flash. There's some Bitcoin. That is bringing the bread and circuses back to the people, right? Now you have a connection again between the players and the fans. And if you really extrapolate that out over the next 5 to 10 years and you get that in the top echelons of sport, you can say goodbye to all these rent-seeking agents. The proletariat take back the club, you know, like you don't, the players don't want to move because they now have this direct interaction with the fans and they can see value for value immediately after the game, a few days after the game. Maybe an interview goes out 3 days later and he explains, you know, and people are like, oh my God, that's inspiring as hell. I didn't realize that on the actual day. Bam, I can just send QR code straight to their Bitcoin wallet. Express value. Instantly.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing. You'll have to mention that to Grant Williams on his Groundsman pod because they always skirt around the issue on that podcast.
It's solved, right? It's funny that these and Grant's been on my pod and we've talked about Bitcoin and he's a sound money man. He gets it. He loves gold. But like the idea of micropayments and, you know, fans being connected back to the source of the game, it's solved because right now you're just literally a body on the stands that nobody cares about. Not even the owners. No, the gate receipts don't matter for these big clubs. They don't care. They're all owned by, you know, sheikhs and goodness knows, like Thai billionaires that are just trying to exchange Thai baht into sterling, so you just buy a football club.
Pretty much, it's just a store of value. It's a bit of capital flight, really, dressed up as a football team. Okay, how has discovering Bitcoin changed you?
Killing the ego. That was a big one. You've got to go through that mill and try and figure out who you really are, what you really stand for. Most people, you know, this is an uncomfortable journey. Like, you know, you can get a bit woo-woo in there. And you find yourself doing things that you probably wouldn't ever have considered yourself doing before. There are so many stories of, and I've done it. I'd actually started changing the way I ate prior to finding Bitcoin, but it just solidified my choices. And, you know, I'd gone down again, just because I'd left that soul sucking job, I had more time to explore other things. So of course I was exploring the education side of things, practically. I was theoretically learning about Bitcoin and playing around with that practically. And I started playing around with my diet. And another shout out, Tim Ferriss, because he wrote the book, The 4-Hour Body. which still probably stands up to a certain degree. But that was basically that opened my eyes to the fuckery that's going on with our food, and sugar in particular. And I became very much aware of the fact of the amount of sugar that was being put into food and wheat powder. Nowadays, I'm very much more focused on the seed oils
mm-hmm.
sneaking into our food, which again, I must thank the Bitcoin community for. I don't know who figured that out first or, you know, what blog they'd been following in like the nutrition world. But yeah, sure enough, this modern team man Texas Slim does a shit ton of work about this, about nutrition and how we're basically systematically being fed rubbish,
sludge
to keep, sludge to keep us sick, so we can never be the best version of ourselves, so that they can sell us more sludge and sell us the drugs to kind of cure the ailments that sludge has, you know, given us in the first place. Modern tea man, he calls it the medical, pharmaceutical, agricultural complex, the MPAC.
Mm.
And I've done a series of interviews with him about it. And he helped me open up my eyes to that as well. So definitely a change in diet. You feel a lot healthier. You think a lot clearer. I was almost tricked into the greenwashing thing when Greta first came onto the scene, because we're just all so primed, you know, to grab onto the latest catastrophe and get behind, oh, we got to fix the world. And then there was just some glaring holes in the whole thing that just didn't add up as usual with anything in fiat world. And now I've just done a complete U-turn on that whole narrative and can see through that. I guess what it's given me is the ability to think more critically and more clearly.
Mm-hmm.
Because anything coming at you through the mainstream media is, like we said at the very beginning, all based on a lie and all based on the incentive structure of fiat currency. So that's why it's based on a lie. It truly is, because fiat currency, if they can just wake up tomorrow and print another $100 billion into the economy, that's a lie. That's literally counterfeiting money. And counterfeiting money is illegal, last time I checked, for all of us, just not for them. So they can print whenever they want, and those ripple effects enter the actual marketplace, the economy, in which we work and actually do things and build things and offer services. So it corrupts every signal. So we have no idea where the true signal is. It's all just noise. And Jeff Booth wrote a brilliant article, Seeing the Signal Through the Noise, which I recommend people go and read. So being able to think critically in a world that is just complete noise is pretty difficult. But hanging on to Bitcoin as I have, and falling down the rabbit hole as far as I have, and doing the 300 or so episodes on my own podcast that I have, I've come to appreciate, like, okay, what is being pumped at me? What's the noise? What are they saying? Where's the incentive for that message? And where do we go, you know, start from first principles? What is going on here? Like, really, what's the end goal? The quickest way to do it is, okay, you're telling me that, I'm going to believe the complete opposite and then build on that and see where I get. And it's not too far away from the truth. It's certainly a lot closer to the truth than what's being said.
Yeah.
Now, people find that very hard to believe, especially boomers. I'm not shouting out boomers, I'm not calling out boomers, but they've just been exposed to the bullshit longer than we have. They're really, really captured. I mean, they've had a number done on them. You know, that this was the first generation to sprout up straight after the Second World War, the most devastating, century. And then it was very, very such easy targets. Like, okay, here's free education. Seems legit. Mm. Nobody read the small print. Mm. Here's free healthcare. Seems legit. Nobody read the small print. But they've had 60 years of that. So when crazies like you and I in our 40s come along and we say, no, that's all broken. That was all a lie. We've got Bitcoin now and this is truth. The very bitter pill for people to swallow.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. They've just got a couple more years on us, really. And their contributions to the arts, to music in particular, notwithstanding, they really are determined, it seems, to just fuck it up before they go. I don't know, man. Yeah, don't get me started on boomers. Obviously, I have family that are boomers, but my goodness, like just stop and get out of the way. Like just stop. Stop ruining things, please. Stop putting VAR in football. You know. What have you learned? I guess we've sort of touched on this, you know, every now and again in the conversation, but what have you learned about the world, about yourself, about what's possible, I suppose, since discovering Bitcoin?
What's possible is immeasurable. It's truly mind-blowing. And that's what makes it so intellectually captivating, this space. You find yourself daydreaming. You know, you could even reverse the thought process and go back to when we had, you know, what was considered to be much closer to a gold standard, when there was so much innovation, so many things happening, incredible buildings, incredible machinery, just leaps forward in human advancement, mm-hmm. and evolution. And then, you know, what would it look like today if we didn't need Bitcoin? This is the thing, right? We need Bitcoin. Mm. We need it because since 1971, when we were completely, that gold standard was completely obliterated. I mean, it had long gone before, but totally obliterated and full on, full tilt fiat standard.
Yeah. Giant rug pull.
Giant rug pull. and now people... You just gotta wonder, if that hadn't happened, where would we be today? If everything was still built on, you know, this, a sound money, we wouldn't. It's hard for people to see it because after that, what did we have? Well, we had the explosion through the 70s, and the 80s, and the 90s of all the cool gadgets, right? Mm-hmm. Everything was great. It was just abundance everywhere, and of course that was by design to kickstart the economy and cheap televisions and whatever it is that were coming our way. We all grew up. You probably only what'd you say, you're around 40? Yeah. So you remember like the first video game systems coming into your home. Then all of a sudden you and your brothers and sisters, you all got your own television in your own bedroom. And then all of a sudden, like, microwaves are on the scene, and like you can make a full steaming hot dinner in like a minute and a half. Like all of this stuff was just so fiat. But at the time, you thought it was just the most amazing period of humanity. Whereas really, it was all going backwards. And you know, Saifedean Moose, he wrote the Bitcoin standard and the fiat standard. He uses Concord as a perfect example of this. You know, Concord was being designed, you know, all the way through, like, when was it, like, when they start drawing those plans up, like late 60s, early 70s, probably. And I think the first flight was ever like 76. Now, all of a sudden, we're flying supersonic. That should still be around. We should be flying supersonic. Like, all planes should be supersonic. And but yet, what happened?
Yeah.
But what happened? Well, because of this fiat standard that we live under.
They say that you can't afford it, or it was uneconomical, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah.
And Jeff talks about this in The Price of Tomorrow, right? Mm. You know, technology, all technology should, you know, should lead to greater freedom for humanity. Yeah. More time. That's what technology gives us. More time. You know, just a pen. You used to have to dip a feather in ink. Mm-hmm. So writing a letter would have taken God knows how long. A pen was technology to save us time. Mm-hmm. That's what technology does. And that technology should always, therefore afterwards, go down in value.
Yeah.
It should go down in price, excuse me. Go down in price.
A deflationary forcing function that enables us to allocate time and resources elsewhere such that we don't mm-hmm. have to keep dipping the goddamn pen in the ink and then go on replacing it or whatever else. I mean, yeah. And then you... Jeff's book, it made a huge impact on me personally, and I'm sure a number of people all around the world, but just that lens of being able to see just the pure theft once you find, like, you think, oh God, like, you're, yep. he's right. So now we're just getting, like, hijacked every day, every year.
Yep.
Your time and your energy just... whittled away, and they, it's nuts. And we should be flying supersonic with pens,
right? With and I've heard Parker Lewis, I don't know who he's quoting, on one of his rants say, you know, the cost of anything should tend towards its marginal cost of production,
right?
And that's what technology does, right? The prices should naturally go down. The only reason they go up is because of the amount of money that's inflated into the system to force prices up, you know, the purchasing power of our already worked for dollars. It forces the purchasing power of those things down, which makes it look as though the prices of goods and services are going up.
Yeah.
Now, if it's true that the cost, the value of anything, or the price of anything, or the cost of anything should trend towards its natural cost of production, its marginal cost of production, shine that light onto fiat currency. It costs them zero to counterfeit money.
Mm-hmm.
They type it in on a computer screen.
Yeah.
And then they press send to, you know, the banking institutions that they choose to disseminate that in the form of debt and loans into the economy. So if money is a product, money is a good, which is the most saleable good, and it costs zero for them to make it, that's where it's going.
Mm-hmm.
It's all going to zero. And that's, they know it. And that's why there's all this talk of the Great Reset and the CBDCs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. And... thank God for Bitcoin, because you can opt out and opt in simply by choosing to transfer some of your value or all, depending on your risk tolerance, I suppose, to a sound money that is a bearer asset that you hold the keys to, and you decide where and when and how much you want to send.
Mm-hmm.
At any time of day, night, 365, 24/7, no sweat at all. You don't have to call up and ask permission or anything. Yeah, it's such a revolution. It's such a revelation for someone when you first come upon it, because we do have this calcified brain that's been, imbued with all of this systematized fiat in. Induced nonsense since, as you were saying before, particularly from school, 15, 20 years, if you go to uni or whatever it is, and discovering Bitcoin, I guess, through the conversations I've at least had with the last few guests, is this defragging of your brain, this decalcification, where you start to clear away some of the detritus and you can think more clearly, think more critically. And not only that, but because you have a little bit of time and energy left in reserve, you can then allocate some of that excess time and energy to discovering new things about yourself, you know?
Yep, it's absolutely.
Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing.
And for you just touched on another pretty important topic there, which I think a lot of people get mixed up with, this idea of, especially if you're coming from the investment world, or you know, you're looking at making an investment into Bitcoin, you know, it's any time of day. Any time of day, any day of the week. That is true liquidity. When people get mixed up with liquidity, they think, oh, no, I want to have my investments in a liquid market. So I need to have it in bonds or stocks or shares or whatever. It's like, guys, they close at the weekend. Like, there's zero liquidity at the weekend. They would have anywhere between 5 to 7 public holidays per year. They're closed on those days.
Yeah, you can't transact.
So if one of those days happens to be a Friday or a Monday, that's 3 days straight. You have zero access. Zero access to those markets. Anything could happen in those 3 days. Anything. And that could range from an earthquake to a tidal wave to some geopolitical event, an invasion across a border. And your position. And your position is going to be very different come the day that you actually want to, you know, rejig that position. But people are thinking that they're still thinking in that way. The way we think in the Bitcoin space is, I'm not building a position. I don't ever want to sell Bitcoin back out for fiat dollars. Mm-mm. I am, and if you're coming in very new and you want to start making some investment because you're listening to podcasts like this and to people, other people that have been in the space a little bit longer, please come in slowly and deliberately. Please find the exchange in your country or closest to your country if you don't have one in your country. That is Bitcoin only, is not going to send you notifications to buy the next big shiny thing because they're disgusting. These shitcoin casinos are disgusting and they will likely go bankrupt or be shut down. Or the founder is just going to run off with all your money. One of those three things is going to happen. So find a Bitcoin only app or exchange, or find non-KYC way to do it. Find a peer-to-peer trading platform. Or if you've got that annoying friend down the pub, ask him, can I just buy my first $10 from you right now in the pub? Start getting used to it. Take it very, very slowly, but please self-custody. And that means get control of your coins. Get a hardware wallet or a signing device, as we should be calling them. And find a manufacturer in or as close to your country as you can. And buy directly from the manufacturer, not via a third party, not via Amazon. Not via, you know, xyz.com. Go straight to the website of that manufacturer and have it shipped. And then start learning about that. And take this slowly. Set up the dollar cost average plan. So it's maybe $50 a week for 10 weeks. Maybe $75 a week for the next 10 weeks. Just take it very, very slowly. Because you don't ever want to be in a position where you are selling out of the Bitcoin again, just to get the dollars that you need to live. Like, you're not at that point yet, and you probably won't be in 6 to 8 years. And hopefully in 6 to 8 years, you'll just be able to go and use the Bitcoin. You won't need to sell it on an exchange. You'll just be able to go to the shop and use it. And we're way closer than we used to be with that. And that is the next leg up. Like, when the merchants wake up and realize, this is just a payments rail. It's just a payment system. I can offer customers another way to pay me for my goods and services. That's all I'm doing. And if they choose to pay me in Bitcoin, I don't even need to hold it in Bitcoin. The merchant doesn't need to hold it in Bitcoin. That can just be flipped straight to Aussie dollars or euros or sterling or whatever it is. for their balance sheet. But what you have done is you've opened up your business now to a bunch of people that are looking for more options of how to pay for goods and services rather than less. Mm-hmm. And it's just a very simple business decision. And big brands are going to start doing that. Imagine it's free marketing for any big brand, right? Why are Nike not accepting Bitcoin? Why are Apple not accepting Bitcoin? It's just, it's a front page headline shoo-in.
Mm-hmm.
All they've got to say is we accept Bitcoin for payment. They don't have to hold it on a balance sheet. They don't have to do a Michael Saylor. We accept it.
Mm.
Okay, fine. I'll buy an iPhone. Thank you very much. I send my Bitcoin because that's my preferred money and my preferred medium of exchange. They receive it. They switch it to dollars.
Sure. You can do that with Stripe. But, you know.
Yes, exactly. You can do it with Coin Corner as well.
Yeah.
That's what my brother does in his business in the UK. He owns a little coffee shop. And people drive from 2 hours away just to come and that's use so Bitcoin, cool. Have yeah. a cafe, have a coffee and a croissant.
I love it. That's perfect. You're right. It's just optionality. It's just another level of optionality, you know. That's it. Now, tell us a little bit about Once Bitten and any other work you're doing in the Bitcoin space, Daniel. You've helped me a lot in the last 3 years listening to your pod and just learning about Bitcoin, you know, more generally. Some of the guests you've had on have just been mind-blowing, one in particular quite recently. But, tell us a little bit about what's happening.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm interested to know which one was the one that you just referenced.
Oh, I don't want to get kicked off YouTube, but it's the Swedish
Pascal.
Yeah, yeah, Pascal. That's it. Yeah,
Pascal Najadi.
That was he's mind blowing.
He is pressing criminal charges against Alain Berset, who, just as we pressed record for that interview, had just been voted to be the Swiss president for 2023. Man, I just cannot believe what's going on in that country. He's pushing charges against his lying about the effectiveness of the COVID vaccines,
mm-hmm.
and whether or not they were contagious. And he found the lie. It took one day's research. And Pascal himself, as we talked about in the video, and I've talked about to him since, took three of the Pfizer injections, and something just wasn't sitting right with him. Did a day's research, found a research paper, public research paper, and statement from one of Berset's direct initiatives to study whether or not people could be transmissible if they'd taken the vaccine or not. And the study showed, totally, completely, what's the word I'm looking for?
Ineffective, doesn't work.
Yeah, exactly. It's done. It was about the whether or not you could transmit the disease, and it showed that whether you've had it, the injection, or whether you haven't, you were still more as likely to spread the disease. And that was the end of that research paper. He went on television 3 months later and completely contradicted the research paper that he had drawn up by this lady. So on public television, he said, if you've had the injection, you are not contagious, and therefore you are safe to go out and use this pass. You had to download the pass sanitaire. So he caught him in that lie. He's pushing criminal charges against him for that under presumed innocence. However, he had pressed the charges on the Friday, and he was voted in to be the president of 2023 on the Wednesday, on the Tuesday we recorded.
Mm.
So those people that voted him in, like this is how rotten to the core like politics is.
What's another lie? Country. It's another lie that's facilitated by your friendly fiat currency.
Yep.
You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. 180 politicians vote for who's going to be, because it's the party that votes. They switch the president each year. So you've got the sitting party. So 180 people vote, like, oh, who's going to look over our party for the next year? So it's not just one guy for 4 years. Out of the 180 people, 141 people voted for him. With the knowledge he just had criminal charges pressed against him for lying about the COVID vaccine. This is the level of nonsense that is going on at the highest level of what is deemed to be Switzerland. This is Switzerland.
Mm.
Like, surely if somebody is currently under investigation for criminal charges, would they not just be like taken out of the ballot that year? You know, you take a seat, Alan, drop a knee, we'll bring you back in next year once all of this has blown over. No. We'll put him in and 141 people are going to vote in favor.
Show me the incentives. I'd love to see what those incentives were to cause that type of action. It really is just clown world, and there is just this, you know, so grateful to have this steady, rhythmic, pulsing 10-minute block. TikTok, yeah. That you can build something good on. Doesn't have to be great, mm-hmm. just something good, just for you, for your family, for whoever. Because it's the only thing that mitigates such egregious bullshit every day. And they don't even Australia. Seem to care.
Australia, man, like the mess that place politically has been in as well.
It's a shit show. I mean, the sun's shining. It for all intents and purposes, you know, it's fine. But I don't dabble with politics anymore. Same as you said at the top of the interview. You know, used to always try and stay current. And if you weren't keeping up, how else am I going to be able to converse with mm-hmm. friends and colleagues, and you just realize, oh, this is all just froth and foam and noise, and it's the energy underneath the wave that I'm most interested in now, you know?
Absolutely. So, yeah, to answer your question, sorry, we got on a tangent.
No, it's all good. Pascal.
But Once Bitten, yeah, that's my podcast. It's a Bitcoin-focused podcast, but then, you know, episodes like that will just present themselves up out of nowhere. Pascal is a Bitcoiner himself, so he was very keen to engage with the community to try and get his message out there. So that was an interesting interview. I also tried to bring on people in the self-directed education space. So I've interviewed people such as Sir Ken Robinson, who's famous for his TED Talk, Do Schools Kill Creativity? I've had Peter Gray on before, who has written the book Free to Learn, who's very, very well known around the world. And a lady called Naomi Fisher, who's written a book called Changing Our Minds. And if anybody out there is questioning the health and happiness of their kids, especially at middle school or high school, secondary school, whatever you call it in Australia level, don't ignore it. That's a red flag. They shouldn't be in there. They're being damaged. They're being brainwashed. Fall down the rabbit hole. Try and take control. It's such a social stigma to take your kids out of education, because everybody around you is going to point fingers at you and say, you've been an irresponsible parent. Whereas, as usual, the complete opposite is true.
Mm-hmm.
You are now being the most responsible parent you've ever, ever, ever considered being, because it's now on you. Like your child's health and happiness and education is now on you. That's self-sovereignty. You're not outsourcing it to some captured, state-sponsored, agenda-fueled shit show. So that those topics, they come up a lot on the pod. So if anybody wants to tune in and listen, there's plenty of episodes to go and get yourself lost in. I've got plenty more coming out. And yeah, I'll be cracking into it again next year in 2023. I've got a book. I wrote the book Choose Life, which I wrote after we'd done the 2.5 years travel with the kids. And I was just trying to get everything down on paper. Like, man, that was a whirlwind. I just checked out of a system and we were free for 2.5 years. It's not a self-help book. It's not a how-to book. It's like a how we did book. And this is how it made us feel. Lots of tools and tricks in there as well that people can use to, implement in their own lives. And hopefully I'll get this piece of writing out called 21 Touch Points, which I'll give myself a project for next year.
Keen to read that. Yes, I've got a copy of Choose Life. It's on the bookshelf behind. Wife's actually gleaned quite a lot of valuable information from that book, so thanks for writing that.
glad to hear.
And thank you, Daniel, for sharing your time and energy with me this morning, this evening, depending on when you're listening to this. Look, it's a pleasure. It was such a shot in the dark, but my experience with these sorts of things dictates that you might as well just shoot the dark and see what happens. And invariably, you get to connect with some pretty inspirational and highly thoughtful individuals such as yourself. So thank you.
Thank you, brother, for starting a pod. This is amazing. We need more. There's not too many. I hope the people that find yours will resonate with your voice and resonate with your thoughts and value your work as well. We really need to all be pulling in the right direction together. And, if this is the medium that you can make the biggest difference, then all power to you. I really appreciate you stepping up and taking on the challenge, taking on responsibility. All you're trying to do is educate others. And that is a, you should be proud. And, and I look forward to seeing how it worked out for you in 2023.
Fair play, mate. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah.